Hello, thank you all for coming. We'll get started. My name is Mike Bailey. I'll be the moderator for this session, and the session is on leadership, systems thinking, and global health. As section co-chair for international health here at APHA, I was struck by the fact that out of close to some 500 submitted abstracts, not one dealt even indirectly with systems thinking. And very few dealt with the application of a specific model to health practice. So thus, this led to the formation of this panel and the panel that took place on theory and systems thinking just a half hour ago. Let's get to the first speaker, Len Rubenstein. He's the president of Physicians for Human Rights. Sure.
Good morning. It's really great to be on this panel to look at broader views of systems thinking in health systems development. And I'm going to talk particularly about human rights as a means of developing health systems. And I should give primary credit to my colleague Eric Friedman of Physicians for Human Rights. He did most of the heavy lifting, and he's also the primary author of a guide we at Physicians for Human Rights issued called The Right to Health and Health Workforce Planning, which is a guide for government officials, NGOs, health workers, and development partners. We have no disclosures to make. I'd just like to start, and this may be something of a caricature, but because it's such a short presentation, I'm kind of stuck with that. That usually system thinking is seen as a technical problem, that there have to be increased capacities, there has to be greater management, there has to be greater coordination, you have to figure out how to do health information systems, how to reform your procurement system, and on and on and on, that these are technical problems. And on top of that, that the system is developed. And this is, I think, common to public health, that you assume the resources that you are given, and you try to develop a system out of what you have. Often, it's looked at from the point of view of the ministry or whoever is in charge of the plan, and it does not address external factors very much, particularly the kind of social determinants that have a huge impact on health, because these are seen as not within the competence or the capacity of the health system managers to develop. And there are no particular systems of accountability either. Now, if I've caricaturized this, I apologize, but I think it does give the flavor that I want to challenge. And I want to challenge through the lens of the right to health and how it makes a difference in some dimensions. And we'll just talk very briefly about four dimensions: health workforce, financing, health information, and bringing it home to PEPFAR. Now, just to briefly, I'm going to give you a two-second overview of human rights, so we'll know what we're talking about. But just broadly, when we talk about human rights, we usually think human rights are for human rights organizations. They're the activists complaining about violations of human rights, naming, shaming, documenting, demanding. We don't think very often that human rights ought to be a framework of those in charge. But that is the most fundamental error. Human rights are not for the outsiders. Human rights is to make sure the outsiders' rights are respected by the insiders. And that's why, in our view, human rights has to be absorbed as one of the fundamental ways of conceptualization of the very purpose of the health system and the very tasks of people planning it. Here's where we derive from 60 years ago, 1948. The UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights says everyone has the right, everyone that is, every person has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care. Now, today we would have written that differently to go beyond medical care, and that is how the right to health has evolved. Now, what difference would this make? Fundamentally, as a starting point from a leadership perspective, if the minister and the government took human rights seriously, how would they think about their task? The first is that human rights are obligations, not policy choices. That when we say everyone has a right, it means that they're entitled by the very the nature of their being a human being, and these have subsequently been adopted in international treaties with our law. But for the purpose of our presentation, we don't have to talk about law, but these are obligations. Second, human rights has very specific standards. And the right to health, there are documents we can go into, I can explain to you where they come from, but there are four standards in particular which are central to the right to health. The standards of availability, accessibility, acceptability, and quality. That is, every health program must, or to meet people's needs, health services have to be available. They have to be available in rural areas as well as urban areas. They have to be accessible, not only financially, but from a transportation standpoint, and as importantly, in a non-discriminatory way, so the disenfranchised and the marginalized people have access, and of course they have to be culturally acceptable and of high quality. In human rights, process matters a lot because the relationship between programmatic social services of all kinds and democratic governments is very close. So participation is one of the highest values in any human rights scheme. So that also has to be taken into account in planning. Fourth, when I say distinct focus, in all the documents on human rights, vulnerable populations are at the top. We don't have a system approach which assumes that everyone is the same. That's very nice. It's the old colorblindness theory that everybody's the same. But everybody's not the same because there's histories of virulent discrimination that has to be taken into account and is reflected in social systems. So, there are some other dimensions. I mentioned at the beginning that we thought of resource commitments in a technical sense as limitations as a given. Under human rights, that's not the case. Under human rights obligations, you have a responsibility to realize human rights over time. It's called progressive realization. And what that translates into is that you have to make maximum available resources. You have to place maximum available resources to the need. And so you can be held accountable for that. There are other responsibilities. You have responsibility to regulate third parties, whether they're polluters or tobacco manufacturers, cigarette manufacturers. Additionally, the next two I'll bring together is a linkage to other rights and other sectors. For example, if you're trying to reduce maternal mortality, we know that emergency obstetrical care has to be made available, and we know what the elements of that are: proper drugs, staff, training, surgical suites for a C-section. But transportation is also key, and the inability of women to get to a place where they can get emergency services is key, and the right to health requires you to address that. It also requires you to address decision making. If a husband controls when the woman can go for medical care, that has to be addressed. That's why it's linked to other rights, and we call it multi-sectoral. And there has to be accountability for all of these obligations. And when we look at the human rights approach to systems, we look at it not only now, I'm turning this inside out. I said before that it's not only for the outsiders, it's for the insiders, and this is what I believe under a human rights standard insiders, planners, program developers must do, but they also will engage with the outsiders and can develop partnerships and gain political support for what they're doing. So that's the 5-second version of the human rights approach. We could spend 2 hours on it. These are some of the sources. If you want to know more about this, there's this very kind of eloquent, this very sexy title called General Comment 14, which really, if you just Google General Comment 14, you'll get a very dense but very interesting document on the right to health and what it really means. So let's apply this very briefly. Let's say we're trying to deal with the health workforce crisis. Well, if you're a country that's serious about developing this plan, it must have some goals that are based on human rights criteria, such as universal access. The MGGs, by the way, don't have commitments to universal access. They have much lower goals, so there's a little conflict there between human rights and the MGGs. So we have to rest on universal access. And there has to be priority to, obviously, the major health needs of the population, but areas that have been traditionally underfunded and neglected, such as maternal and child health. And this is very important. We have to keep coming back to the money. That the targets, and we've seen this over and over again, the targets are all too often based on fiscal restraints imposed externally. And that is not a human rights approach. Also, you have to look at equity. You have to make sure that everybody has access. And this is a huge problem in health workforce plans. And it relates to making sure that you educate all the different, you touch all the needs for education of different dimensions of the health workforce so you get the right mix. You have to create incentives to serve rural areas and underserved population. And once again, you want to link the problem of health workforce to the ability of this health workforce to do its job. For example, having water in clinics, which is a huge problem in many countries. So you can't look at workforce apart from working conditions, and you can talk about salary and many other things. We also want to emphasize and incorporate participation in the development of the plan so the people who are affected by the plan are consulted and have a role in developing it, including health workers themselves, and you must be able to monitor and evaluate that and include resources so the participation can be effective. Participation usually fails, not because people are uninterested, but because there's no resource commitment to pay people to come to the meetings. So, if I'm hitting you over the head with this, without the human rights lens, you might forget the dimension of human rights education for health workers so they themselves understand human rights obligations. You might forget abuses by health workers. For example, we know discriminatory practices against people with HIV by health workers are also common, so you want to bring that in, and you want to make sure other issues like confidentiality are covered. So this list could go on and on and on, but these are just brief examples. Another example, because I don't have all that much time, we know under the right to health, you must have economically accessible health services. So you've got to look as you're developing your financing system, you've got to look at user fees. We know that user fees are a huge excluder of people, if that's a word, excluder, from people accessing health services. And there are real paradoxes, too, because if you're going to health workforce development, which I talked about a minute ago, in many countries, user fees are used to try to raise the salaries of the health workers to keep them from leaving. And that is rational in some sense, but it also drives people away and deprives people of health care. So when you develop a financing system, and this was a huge problem in the 1990s when the international financial institutions basically imposed user fees as a condition of aid, and we ended up with huge exclusion of people. Then you have to pay attention to excluded costs, that is out-of-pocket costs, that are huge, are very, very large percentages of health costs, particularly pharmaceuticals and transportation. And you've got to build in subsidies, of course, and look at what they reach the poor. Then, in finance, we also have to look at priorities. If you look at that graph on the left, it's not very well marked, but it's primary, secondary, tertiary referral. That's what the four bars are. And that is, we didn't put the source on this, I apologize. But that's how, it's not an uncommon way for which health resources to be distributed. We know this is all wrong. And we have to reorient priorities to get the health needs of the whole population met, and human rights forces you to get there. Third, a simple issue, health information systems. You think this is the most technical of all technical issues. Why does human rights matter? Well, because without good health information systems, you can't have equity. You have to disaggregate data. So make sure that disenfranchised and vulnerable groups access can be traced and that interventions can be made to remedy it. So health information systems turns out to have a major human rights dimension. So let's now bring this to PEPFAR. You can see we could go on and on about these issues. Well, here's some questions we want to ask about PEPFAR. One is it reaching rural areas? Is it taking the path of least resistance? It's a human rights dimension of accountability. I mentioned a moment ago, enormous problems with stigma and discrimination, and that is very, very pervasive a problem, as we all know, in HIV. And the question is, how much is PEPFAR addressing this problem? And the answer is not very much. In fact, PEPFAR has really taken the position that that's not their job, that that's somebody else's job, and they have some training programs, and their values are non-discrimination, and yes, they pay attention to women's rights, but the answer is not very much. And on issues of confidentiality, there's almost no attention at all. So, we also have another problem with PEPFAR, which, as we know from all vertical programs, that vertical programs tend to undermine systemic development, and there's been a real challenge to try to harness PEPFAR to, from a human rights standpoint, to say you can't take health workers from primary care programs because you're paying high salaries. You can't make the system weaker as a result of your focus on HIV. So the idea is to move PEPFAR to a systems program meeting, and if you use human rights standards, you can get there. And if you want to see how this is applied in more detail, I mentioned at the beginning a publication of Physicians for Human Rights, which goes into detail about how to apply the human rights framework as a standard and a mechanism to develop health workforce plans in developing countries. And so that's where you can get it. I have maybe one or two copies here, hard copies, if anybody would like them. So thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity.